You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Brandon Cooley.
Hey, everybody.
And today we are talking about The Mummy, and then in the second half of the show, Gina Versa from The Waffle Press will be talking with me about It Comes at Night, the new A24 horror film. So to get things started off, Brandon and I are talking about The Mummy, or I guess now the introduction to the Universal Dark Universe, or UDU, as some people have called it. Oh, God. So, Brandon, before I bore the audience, why don't you tell everyone your thoughts on The Mummy?
Well, first let me ask, what expectations did you have of this before going in? Because I had seen the original Mummy from 1999, 6 years ago, and the ride at Universal Studios is pretty awesome. But besides that, I haven't seen the old Mummy from the 30s. I haven't seen, I'm not an expert on this kind of stuff, on horror movies like this. I mean, what did you expect going into it?
I didn't really expect that much, honestly, because, I mean, I was hoping the last few movies that Tom Cruise has been in, they've been, solid. For the exception of Jack Reacher 2. I was hoping for, maybe since, he had been involved, and he is, on almost every project he's on, he's a very hands-on director. He's very selective of the people he worked with. He even got Christopher McQuarrie to do drafts for this movie. So while I was not really interested, I really wasn't into Alex Kurtzman directing this movie, who had only directed one movie before this. I was intrigued by what and Christopher McQuarrie bring up.
Because when I saw the trailer, when it was coming out last year or something, the trailer didn't look bad to me. I thought the plane sequence looked kind of cool, the way he survives the plane and wakes up in the body bag. The trailer had a very different tone to it than the movie did. The movie is a mix of a lot of different, tonally it changes constantly. It's a mix of it's a horror movie, action movie, and tried to have some comedic moments that failed really miserably. It's just a kind of a mess. A mix up of a lot of things. Is that what you felt? Did you feel the same way?
The trailer was a lot more, the original teaser trailer that came out in December was more, horror and more, action horror hybrid, but this one is a combination of horror / Tom Cruise kind of, and I talk about Christopher McQuarrie, but there's some little, you can tell Christopher McQuarrie kind of wrote a few scenes, especially the thing Imhotep or Amunet in the woods, and he's being thrown up and knocked down. Mm-hmm. That's a very Christopher McQuarrie. So there's a combination of a lot of different tones, and it does feel like there were six or eight different writers attached to this movie.
Yeah, it did.
Because my issue with the movie is that it feels like a studio executive or a movie producer, you know, asking a bunch of people around, okay, how do we make, it's like they approach this movie as like if it was like a math problem or like some overly complicated, you know, calculus problem where it's like, okay, group, how do we make this mummy movie work rather than try to find someone who had a cohesive vision for a movie and even, you know, had some great ideas for world building and possibly lead up to a cinematic universe.
Yeah. I felt the same way. None of it really worked for me. The only part that did was Russell Crowe's performance. Well, I shouldn't say performance. I mean, he was fine in it, but I think, I mean, it's not really a spoiler because I think everybody knew going in that he was Jekyll and Hyde. That part worked for me. But besides that, nothing really did. The mummy character, she just isn't really scary in this. I'm not sure what they were trying to go for. In terms of the plot, it's very convoluted. And like I said, the comedic moments are very awkwardly done. Tom Cruise is fine, but his character is just not, I don't know. It seems kind of a mess to me. I mean, it just doesn't really all fit together. I could pick out individual moments. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I'll go ahead and say what I thought were positives, and that were, I thought, I know a lot of people are kind of complaining about the cast of the movie, particularly Tom Cruise's casting, but I thought in terms of what the actors were asked to do and what the script that was cobbled together by 8 writers, what that entailed from all the actors, I thought they did fine. Like even Annabelle Wallace, I thought she did an okay job, even though she's not really getting that much to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a good example. Like Tom Cruise was fine. It just didn't seem like his character should have been in the movie, or it should have been a different main character. And like the biggest problem I had, Jake Johnson didn't do a bad job because I like Jake Johnson. He plays a lot of funny characters, but his character was from New Girl. I'm not sure if you've seen the sitcom, but he's the comic relief kind of for the first like half an hour of the movie. And it felt like they just pulled him straight from the sitcom and put him in the movie. It's very awkward. I told you that probably the worst scene in the whole movie is the bathroom scene. The way he comes back from the dead, the way he comes back from the dead is so sloppy. I just can't imagine what they were thinking with that. I don't know, because he doesn't even seem to give Tom Cruise any like helpful hints about what to do next. I guess he kind of does, but it could have been, it's all unnecessary. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing with Jake Johnson is he is a really talented comedian / actor. Like he has really good comedy timing. Problem is he gets stuck in a lot of really mediocre films like Jurassic World and this and the Ashton Kutcher / Natalie Portman sex comedy he did like years ago. He just gets stuck, you know, in these like really mediocre films and they don't really do anything for him. But I can still see like why he would do these movies. Like I can still see Like I can see why someone would want to do The Mummy or Jurassic World. So for him to do this, he's not the worst thing. He's not a terror. He's not absolutely horrible in this thing. It's just scope of things. It wasn't really necessary to keep him around. And this is kind of spoilers. We're kind of spoiling the movie a bit. But Jake Johnson dies and comes back at some point in the movie, and he's kind of like that character that keeps decomposing in American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, I've heard that comparison a lot. I haven't seen the movie, but here's a good
I haven't seen the movie American Werewolf in London, but I have seen like clips, and I know what people are talking about when they're talking about that particular character and making those comparisons.
Yeah, a good example of how this film just is, how it's so sloppy is that, like, during one of the scenes that's supposed to be scary, it's when the first time the other mummies are holding down Tom Cruise and she's trying to stab him. I was assuming that was being played like as a horror movie moment. I mean, like when these mummies attack people, they like, it's a horror movie, you know, they suck out their soul or I don't know, something happens. So they're holding him down. And as she starts to touch him, he starts to feel ticklish. That's the first moment. I'm like, okay, what is this doing? And then the next moment she walks in, what's her name?
Annabelle Wallace's character.
Annabelle Wallace, had the love interest. She walks in, and the mummies all turn to her at once, and it's supposed to be this comedic moment. Like it interrupts this, like this horror movie basically with these two comedic moments that just aren't very funny. The movie constantly does stuff like that, and it's just kind of, it's just a weird movie like that way. I mean, like the chase scene right after that, it's an action chase scene, and it's supposed to be scary afterward with the, I don't know. It's hard to talk about to explain without people having seen it, but you know what I'm saying? It's just a mix
of stuff. It's not a scary movie. I mean, there's scary imagery. I mean, when Omnit like sucks the souls out of these people and basically turns them into zombies, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horror imagery, but it's like, it's not scary. It's like PG horror or something.
Yeah.
Or very extreme PG horror. But still, it's just like, okay, whatever. I mean, I heard like in the background of one of my audience, like some people like scream at like one of the jump scares in this movie. But I mean, really, no one really had like a huge reaction to like any of the scary parts in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really. I mean, it wasn't. it's just funny. Yeah, I just don't know the intention behind this movie, besides to make a universe, you know, which is not the new thing nowadays. But
everything must have a cinematic universe, even King Arthur and Robin Hood.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the issue. That's kind of the issue now. It's like everyone's trying to be Marvel, but Marvel kind of took everything. But I mean, I know you're not the biggest fan of Marvel movies, but at least Marvel, like their first, you know, time out of the gate, like they had like a movie that felt like a movie. It felt like a cohesive film you could watch and be entertained and enjoy. And it didn't feel like super necessary to be like, and now Nick Fury shows up and presents a Black Panther.
Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of Iron Man from 2008. I liked it though. So, I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, it's a good movie. So, but, I was never a huge fan of the universe stuff.
Yeah. I mean, even Man of Steel, I don't really like the movie, but at least it is a movie.
Yeah.
At least it's a movie. The Mummy has this issue of it's like a pilot. It's like a TV pilot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good comparison.
But you're not really interested in anything that's going on. That's kind of the problem with this, you know, you know, thing being the start of a cinematic universe is that it really doesn't, the thesis statement doesn't really add up to much, which is like essential if you're doing, even if on a TV pilot, it's essential to have a very strong thesis statement,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Mummy doesn't really have that. It's just, you know, this is the world.
Yeah, and I feel like too, it's one of those movies where they explain everything to you. They have to explain every plot point and every part of the, and it's just needlessly convoluted. It's funny, the opening scene with Russell Crowe explaining the whole backstory, it was almost like Lord of the Rings with Cate Blanchett explaining how the ring was created. And it's like, I mean, do you really want to go down this path movie? It's like, do you really want to explain this much to us? Like, I mean, I just, when I think of the Mummy, I just think of people in ancient Egypt digging up a tomb or a pyramid and just finding a mummy and having it attack people. I just, it's not that complicated. It's a horror movie. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah, that's the thing too. It's like the opening, you know, it's like we see the whole, we actually see the whole like events of Amunet killing like her dad and her, you know, whole and his whole family, like yeah. all throughout the movie. So the whole opening is kind of pointless, even though, yeah. even though it is a cool setup for, you know, the Pergium, I think that's what it's called, the Pergium. Like, it's a cool setup for that, but honestly, like, how they introduce Amunet in this movie doesn't really quite work.
It's just really,
it's not really fleshed out that well. Or yeah, and not only that, we see it multiple times.
Yeah, it's just it's just very odd because the opening scene is of the Crusades. Like, they're lowering a soldier or a knight into a into a grave. And then in London, they find this tomb in present day, and they talk about it on the news. But they cut to ancient Egypt or Iraq, and it's like, okay, what does the London tombs have to do with this? And you figure out it's just an emerald or just a rupee. And it's like, you know, the dagger could have been in a museum in London. She could have just gone to London. It could have been that simple, you know, or they could have kept the whole thing in the Middle East. I just don't understand why it has to, like, I don't know. It's just, it seems unnecessary to me.
Yes. And I have a question. Does it bother you that, isn't it odd that this movie is called The Mummy, but 95% of it doesn't take place in actual Egypt?
Yeah, that's the way I mean. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, but she doesn't really seem to look like a mummy. I mean, yeah, she looks like an actress, or really a model, wearing mummy like makeup as a Halloween costume. I mean, it's just very odd. Like,
she looks like a film school project gone horrible. Yeah. She looks like an art school project gone really wrong.
Yeah, except if I remember right, the original mummy from the Brendan Fraser from 1999, he starts off as a skeleton or something, and he starts off as a mummy, and then slowly becomes a person over time, like, over the course of the whole movie. So it is kind of scary to see that, like, him become like an actual, you know, go from a mummy to like an actual like person, but she seems to just come back to life immediately. It's just really, yeah, kind of lazy.
Yeah. Well, in the first mummy, it's, you know, the group of people, they're cursed, and Brandon Fraser and his, and Rachel Weisz and a couple other guys, they're trying to keep the people that are cursed alive, but they fail miserably because they're just completely unprepared for what Imhotep, I think that's right. They're completely unprepared for what this character can do. And also they're being, you know, ratted out by an old colleague of Brendan Fraser. And the scenes are actually really scary of them, like, sucking the souls out of people. Like, it's actually really terrifying.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that one, but I remember it being somewhat decent. I mean, it wasn't a bad movie, but yeah, it's better than this.
Well, it's a more cohesive vision. Like, it feels like someone sat down and wrote this entire script and made it into a movie. Like, it feels like, you know, there was a whole vision in store for this movie. Whereas this one, it's like, this is a TV pilot. This is, you know, this thing. And I don't really, and I don't have a problem with movies being like a TV pilot, but the problem is it has to be its own contained story.
Yeah.
and this one, it's not, it just felt like a cash grab. Like, I don't, it's just unfortunate. I mean, all movies are cash grabs anyway nowadays.
Yeah.
But this one is just like, do it. Let's do The Mummy because we did it really good a few years back. So let's do that one first. And then we'll worry about the rest when we get to them.
Yeah.
Well, those will be our next problems we solve. We won't hire anybody that has like a cool, cohesive vision. We'll just solve them like problems. So going into the Dark Universe, do you have any, I don't know if you've seen any of the monster movies, Brandon, like the old 1930s, 1940s Universal monster movies?
Yeah, I've seen Frankenstein and Dracula. I like those quite a bit. Yeah, I like Dracula. That's kind of aged badly, but, well, it hasn't aged badly, but Frankenstein's a great movie, though, from 1931. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite one that I've seen. Have you seen Frankenstein?
So I wanted to ask this.
Well, have you seen Frankenstein from 31 or Dracula? Or?
I'm actually going to shame a lot of these horror viewers. I haven't seen any of the Universal Monster movies.
I've only seen two. I mean, most people probably haven't these days. They're kind of, they're not as famous as the, you know, as other movies, but, yeah, I got to check them out.
One day I will. I mean, cause I would love to see these movies. It's just, I still have quite a few other horror movies I have to watch from the 80s. So anyway, let me ask you this, Brandon. Since you've seen Dracula and Frankenstein, what would you want to see? Like, how? What's a way that, you know, the Dark Universe can kind of fix itself or, you know, become interesting, essentially?
Well, I mean, like, I don't even know because, I mean, Coppola tried to make a Dracula movie in, like, 92. And that wasn't bad, but, I mean, it's very forgettable, though. I mean, the problem is that these ideas have been done so many times that they just need to take in a whole different direction than what they're doing. I just, because it's really predictable. I mean, these monsters have become tropes basically. They're so recognizable that I don't know what they could possibly do to like revive it. I mean, they tried with like Van Helsing to make a horror movie that was like an action movie too. Did you see Van Helsing from like 2004?
I've seen parts of it. The problem, I can't get past the terrible CGI. I just can't I can't get past everything being CGI. Like that's the thing with, you know, going back to The Mummy for a second, Stephen Sommers, who made Van Helsing, made The Mummy 2. And it seemed like after The Mummy Returns, he just went on like for like his next three movies, The Mummy Returns, Van Helsing, and G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. Just like, let's just animate my movies.
Yeah.
And we'll just film live action plates and then we'll spend a year animating everything and it never looking good. Like it never, like his, like for some reason he CGIs everything. And even when he's not like CGIing like an action scene, it still looks CGI. Like it still looks fake.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what they could do with these new, I mean, I'm not very familiar with the Invisible Man. So that could be a new idea, like not a new idea, but like a new kind of movie in terms of, not being predictable, but for as terms of Dracula and Frankenstein and like the Wolfman and like, I don't know what they could do to make it unique at this point. It's been done so many times.
I have actually seen John Carpenter's, Memoirs of the Invisible Man, which is actually a good movie.
Okay.
A lot of people find it really soft because it's a very like romantic tale of the Invisible Man, and it's got Chevy Chase in it. But I still think it's a good movie. It's, you know, very well done. But anyway, I've been thinking about writing an art like something on my blog about the Dark Universe, on like what to do going forward. And the only thing I can come up with is simply, just go back to the gothic horror. I mean, I know, going back a couple years back with Crimson Peak, no one really went and saw that movie. But really these are gothic horror movies. Like even The Mummy is a gothic horror film.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to make these, like, you know, so if you're going to make like Frankenstein and the Wolfman and, you know, and Dracula, like, if you're going to make these kind of movies, you know, make them go back to the gothic horror that made them famous before. And if you really have to, you know, you can add in the jump scares that get our generation going. Like, you can modernize gothic horror. Like, gothic horror is not supposed to be just, you know, this romanticized, version of horror. It's you can make it modern. So I mean, there's an, and on top of that, like, I would like to see these movies get R-rated.
That's why I was going to mention
an R-rated gothic horror universe.
Well, I was going to mention that, but the problem is that if it's a universe, it has to be PG-13 to make money, and so that's why I don't like universes. It's just, I don't see why these movies have to be connected. I don't understand why they have to all be PG-13, made for a wide audience. I mean, they should be made for a wide audience, but, you know, radar movies make money too sometimes. I just don't like universes. I really don't, except for a few minor cases where it works. But
the thing with, you know, these monster movies is they don't have to be, you know, big budget action spectacle. They can, you know, it doesn't cost that much to do. You can make a Dracula or a Frankenstein or even a Creature from the Black Lagoon movie for like $40 to $50 million, which, you know, for an R-rated movie, that's not terrible. Like, that's not, you can make money off of that.
Yeah.
So essentially, I mean, these movies don't have to be big budget action summer spectacle. They just have to be, you know, an interesting gothic horror universe. So really with the Dark Universe, I just don't care for it right now. I mean, we've only seen one movie, but still, it's like, this universe doesn't interest me, and I didn't come out interested in this universe after it came out. So I don't know. So Brandon, I don't know about you, but I think I'm done with the Dark Universe for a while.
I didn't even know what it was until I saw this movie. Like, I saw the Universal logo, and then I saw it turn around, and it says Dark Universe. I don't know. I didn't even know what it was. I'm not keeping up with the stuff, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, they announced it, like, 2 weeks ago, because up till this point, it was called the Monsters Universe.
Yeah.
But Legendary kind of has taken that, because with their, you know, Kong versus Kong, you know, King Kong and Godzilla movies. Because those are going to be they're going to be connected as well. So,
which I guess so, that's fine. I don't know.
So
I just watch these movies one at a time. I watch these movies one at a time. I don't care about any connected stories. Yeah, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah. So I think I'm done with The Mummy. I'm sorry, folks. This is boring, but this movie did nothing for me. Like, it didn't scare me or give me laughs or amaze me. I just sat in a theater for 2 hours just waiting for shit to happen.
Yeah, I was fairly bored.
What?
I was fairly bored, yeah. And usually I give these movies, like, I'm not too harsh on movies like this. You know, like, you said Jack Reacher 2 was kind of disappointing. I thought it was too, but I still enjoyed parts of it. You know, I can usually find good moments, good aspects of a movie, but this was really just boring to watch. For me.
Yeah, this is not doing well, and I hate it because I think there is potential in a gothic, in kind of bringing the gothic monsters for a new generation, mm-hmm. but I don't think this movie or what this universe's intentions are, you know, I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it's worth all, like, the hassle and the trouble. Yeah. With all that said, though, I am interested in a Bride of Frankenstein movie directed by Bill Condon. So I'm very interested in what he can do with that movie. But then again, if it was anyone else, I don't think I'd be interested in watching a movie out of that universe again.
Yeah.
So Brandon, are you ready to move on to the next segment with Gene?
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah, I don't have much else to say about The Mummy.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be back in just a second with Gina Versa for It Comes at Night. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back in just a second.
What's he see?
What's he see?
He heard something. Let's get back in the house. Now!
Could have been an animal. Not a person. But just to be safe, a red door stays closed and locked all the time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm here with Gina Versa from the Waffle Press to talk about It Comes at Night.
Hey,
How's it going?
It's going good. So starting us off, I really love this movie. It Comes at Night. It's a very well-made thriller. And we'll talk about why I feel like some people feel disappointed, but Gene, I want to get your thoughts on It Comes at Night. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I saw the trailers for the film, like way back, you know, a couple months ago. I was really anticipating this movie. You know, I'm a big horror fan. I do a lot of horror shorts, so it's right up my alley. I'm a big A24 fan, and, you know, I just went in. I thought, you know, there probably would be some stuff that would twist and turns, I guess. And, I went into it with an open mind, and I really dug it. It was not what I was expecting, but I think it was better than what I was expecting, I guess. You know, it's not your usual, like, horror film. It's more about, like, kind of the ugliness of people, you know, what people will do to survive. You know, what you were saying earlier off the show was, you know, it's kind of how people would actually be in the apocalypse. And I really agree with that. Without spoiling anything, I guess we'll go into spoilers. But, yeah, no, it's a great horror movie. You know, just really creepy and super unsettling. And, you know, I'm still thinking about it, like, almost a week later. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies where there's not a lot of jump scares, but it's atmospheric. No. It's unsettling, you know, from moment one. And really the movie that kind of encompasses the whole, or the scene that encompasses the whole movie is the opening where, and this is not a spoiler, it happens very literally in the first 5 minutes.
Right.
The grandfather dies or gets infected with the plague. And he has to, like, be killed by his son-in-law and, you know, assist, you know, into his burial ground, into his, like, you know, final resting place, and then burned, you know, after being shot in the head. And it encompasses the whole movie because you're seeing, you know, the combination of, you know, the loss between, you know, the loss between the mother and, you know, her dad. You're seeing the son-in-law take a very violent, very almost unnecessary approach to disposing of a corpse, or disposing someone who's infected.
Mm-hmm.
But you see the primalness, the brutality of it, and the amount of control in it, and then you see the innocence in the 17-year-old kid, whose innocence is being lost, you know, due to his, you know, grandfather being killed.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's like you're seeing the whole encompassing of, like, what this movie is going to be. And so, you know, and so for the movie to be called It Comes at Night, you know, you're right. There's not really that much. There's nothing that really comes at night, you know, like in a personification form.
Mm-hmm.
But what comes at night is the paranoia and the fear and, you know, the nightmares and the things that do, and, you know, and the things that do kind of bump, and the things that do bump in the night that, you know, mm-hmm. startle people. So, I mean, there's nothing really there, and there's not that many, and there's not, you know, that many plot holes. Okay. Everything is there to, everything there is pretty much to illustrate, you know, to heighten the tension even further, because right. one of the things Trey Edward Schultz, I think,
yeah,
he does a really good job with, you know, building the tension and getting it to, you know, it reaching its maximum in the climax.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like it's kind of like The Shining, where, you know, people always want, like, answers, like, right in front of, you know, like movie, like horror movies like that, or like The Shining or It Comes at Night. You could figure everything out, you know, everything's there for a reason. You just need to, like, look hard enough, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. You're right. And what I liked about this movie even more is the, you know, is the horror itself is that it's not a thing, a personified thing. It is a, it's really this group of people that are turning on each other.
Yeah.
In this like apocalyptic setting. Mm-hmm. Right. The two families that, you know, they join together in hopes to build each other, to build each other up and to keep them strong. Mm-hmm. It doesn't end well for both of them. What happens?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could probably go into spoilers, I guess. Dave.
Right. Yeah. Right. We can. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, they pretty much, you know, tear each other apart. Excuse me. You know, just going right into it. The end of the world, or you know, the apocalypse, I guess, just brings out the worst in, you know, people. And you know, you really see that in the movie, which, you know, you have like, you know, these two families. And I mean, if you look at it from their perspective, maybe, you know, you could see where they're coming from. But you know, they're basically, because they're trying to protect each other, and no, there's not one good or bad character in the movie. It's just people, and they pretty much, you know, tear each other apart. So, you know, it's very, very honest, I guess, besides being a little dark.
Oh, sure. I mean, you're right. There is not a antagonist. There's not one you can say is a bad person, but it is interesting that the characters we do follow, or the characters we followed before we got this, this other family introduced, is, you know, we're following them as they become more vicious and more, you know, less caring, or they become more of, they're surviving on their own instincts because they realize that one of the family members from the other group has the disease, has the plague in them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing everything they can to protect themselves, but it's at what cost? And the cost is their humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And you know, you never quite find out who got infected first. There's a lot of you could probably figure it out, you know, just there's no kind of building on the thing I said before. There's some stuff still left to interpretation, which, you know, you have to figure it out. But yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, I think Schultz, I think he kind of left it. I think he did leave it pretty clear. It was the little kid from the younger group.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think it was that opened the door, and he was sleepwalking.
Right.
Well, and
okay.
To be fair. The older kid, like he knows that it's not entirely possible for it to happen, but I mean, because the thing is so high, he couldn't reach it.
Right. I got out of the movie that it was the son of the I forgot his name, the son of the Joel Edgerton character, because you see him, I think he gets infected first from the grandpa, and you see him having all these like strange dreams, and he kind of like, I think he's kind of like sleepwalking too, because, you know, you see him in, you know, other places in his dreams, and then he goes back to bed. I think what I got out of it was him, and because the kid can't open that door. This is a big plot point. You know, he can't open the door because he's like too small. I don't know if he got some books or anything, but the son, you know, he gets the little kid infected, and then the kid gets, you know, everyone else infected. At least that's how I interpreted it. I don't know if it's, what do you think, man?
I mean, that's a good possibility, because I mean, right after this whole incident at the end of the movie, where the second family is gunned down by Jay Egerton's character.
Yeah.
The character's name is Travis. Travis gets infected very, very quickly. And you could be right. Like, or even more, if you want to stick to more of the theme of the movie, which is no matter how well you prepare yourself, you're always going to be fucked.
Yeah.
You could say they were always infected. Mm-hmm. It was just, it's taking them longer. It's taking them longer to, you know, for everything to take in place.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, they could have, the family could have gotten infected from the grandfather at the beginning. So, you know, you never know.
Right. Because they said it took like a day or two before they saw signs of anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, I think some stuff is still, I think it's the viewer's interpretation, you know, because he gives you a lot of hints at where, you know, who got sick first or how it originated, you know?
Right. And I mean, and to be honest, you know, there is an ongoing theme of there can be you. And I noticed this too, like the moment they lose the dog, which is part of that, you know, 7-part union, with the two families and the dog, like the moment that they just kind of say, ah, screw the dog. That's when everything goes to hell.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught that, but that was like, I think that was like Schultz saying like the moment the union kind of breaks, that's when it all collapses.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. It was a very ominous like foreshadowing of events to come, kind of the loss of innocence. And,
right. Mm-hmm.
What did you, kind of changing gears, what do you think of kind of going back to the dog scene? Do you think the dog saw anything in the woods, or like, I think Travis sees something in the woods at some point, and you see him kind of sketching kind of these like weird kind of creatures. Would you think of that?
Oh, I didn't notice he was sketching creatures like afterward.
Yeah. Like after, I think like he's all like kind of phasing out.
Oh, you're right. Talking. Yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. I don't think he saw anything. It's probably his imagination trying to fill the gap of what happened to the dog.
Okay.
However, with that said, though, something did happen in the woods with the dog, because the kind of injuries that they were showing he had, like a big hole in his side.
Mm-hmm.
I have a dog, and you would literally have to like stab him, or you would literally have to do some serious harm. And it would have to be a wounded inflicted from another being. So yeah. I think something, he did see something, or the dog saw something.
Okay.
I mean, clearly, you know, dogs just don't, I know this from having a dog too. A dog doesn't like run out in the woods and just keep following and keep following nothing. Like, they're meant to hunt. They're meant to hunt something. So the dog was chasing something, but I mean, I think the reason why Schultz didn't want to show it is because it didn't really matter. Because they were already paranoid enough about what was in the woods.
Yeah.
And what, you know, could come out of it, and what the plague could bring to all six of them. So I think, you know, knowing what killed what hurt the dog is kind of irrelevant.
Okay. Because I kind of felt the plague kind of mutates people into kind of, you see with the grandfather in his dreams, or I don't know if it correlated, but you see him like very like kind of skeletal. He looks kind of zombie-esque. I got that it kind of changes people into sort of some sort of creature.
Right. Well, also like having symptoms of like bubonic plague.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It could have been a lot of things out there, you know, but yeah, I agree. To the plot, you know, it didn't really matter to the story in a sense, because they're already paranoid.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you one more thing before we go to the next topic? Do you think, knowing that the kid was sick, and they didn't have gas masks on,
right,
that regardless of, like, regardless if they had left with the food, that second family just leave with the food and water, do you think it would have mattered that they just left? Because they were not wearing gas masks when they were walking out, and she was holding him pretty close. So I don't think it would have, I don't know, I don't really think it would have mattered if they were gunned down or if the idea that they could have came back.
Yeah.
For more food or water.
Yeah. I don't think they would have come back, because it seems like they just kind of wanted to leave because they were already kind of freaked out and they didn't trust them. But, I think the family still would have been infected. You know, it didn't really, I mean, you know, it's tragic that they killed them, but they were already kind of doomed, you know?
Yeah, I think they were already doomed. So, and I guess I don't know how the plague works. Like, I would assume eventually you would drop dead with this virus.
Because you never really got the, you got some symptoms.
You got
some sort of idea.
You got some idea of what the symptoms are, but you didn't see like what happened to the grandfather long enough. Like if he had the disease more and more, if he would have just like either died over or if he would have just turned into like a literal zombie.
Yeah.
So I was just asking because I wondered if, you know, if really it didn't, if it really mattered if they left with food or water or if they just left it all, like, would they have just made it on their own?
Yeah, I think they would have, I don't know, they would have made it, I guess. The other family, they probably would have been infected or something as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, you know, it's definitely open to interpretation, you know?
Oh, of course. That's what the whole movie is kind of more about, is, like, what do you think will happen? And that's, like, the most interesting part about this movie is it allows you as the audience to basically think and create your own ideas and leaves you thinking being more involved in your own mind and what you think about the movie than anything else. Because I mean, I saw The Mummy also this weekend and that movie does nothing for me. And I don't care about the characters.
Yeah. It's a very bad movie.
Yeah. And even worst of all, the film, you know, I don't even, the way the film leaves you, it leaves you on a way of there could be more stories, but it doesn't leave in a way that you're
wanting more stories.
Yeah, you want more, or you're invested in more of this, you know, story. It thinks you will, but it doesn't. So,
I haven't seen it yet, but you know, I've heard. I don't know if I want to, and it's. Sorry, I was rambling a little bit, but it just really sucks because I really like the Universal Monsters, and they keep trying to reboot them, and it just never works out.
Well, I mean, it's tough because you can go in the way that Crimson Peak did with the Gothic romance or go full Gothic.
Yeah.
And you alienate this generation horror audience, which they're more into, you know, they're more into like the Annabelles and the Conjuring and all the crap that's on Netflix, you know, they're into more.
Uh-huh, for sure.
But if you go action horror, you alienate it, you kind of go against the identity of, you know, the Wolfman and the Mummy. You go against those.
Uh-huh.
You go against the identity of those. Even the Mummy, Stephen Sommers Mummy, you know, balance that line of, you know, it's horror and action, but it's also a swashbuckling adventure, so it kind of it all works in tone and theme, whereas the Mummy doesn't really have like a central theme or tone or a goal. But that's the Mummy.
It's not about the Mummy today. Or any day.
Yeah, so jumping off of, you know, expectations from audiences, the audience reception for this movie has been mixed, if I'm being nice.
I really dislike that because that's how it was for The Witch, you know, where you have like a horror movie and it's such a great horror film. You know, you just have all these like regular theater goers and they go in with all these expectations. And it's not totally their fault because they're watching like trailers and all this marketing that's saying that this movie is this way and they spend the money to be in the theater and it's something else. So, you know, it really sucks sometimes though.
Well, going back to The Witch, I remember seeing that movie and there was only like 6 or 7 people, including myself, in the theater anyway. Mm-hmm. And I remember every single one of like the other people in the audience were like, what the fuck? This movie wasn't scary at all. Like,
yeah.
Why was this critically reviewed? Like, this wasn't a scary movie.
Right.
And to a certain extent, I still love The Witch, but
yeah,
I don't think of The Witch as a scary movie, as a horror film. I think of it as more of a psychological thriller. I think it's more of a paranoia thriller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I really dug the movie, The Witch. But yeah, no, I see it more as like a thriller, you know, with horror elements, you know.
Right. And I think It Comes at Night is more horror branded. Like there's more horror to it.
Yeah, for sure.
There's more of like the genre there's more of the genre expectations, but the thing is, and I probably should have done this. I should have, but apparently the rest of the trailers after the teaser trailer, you know, either misled people or showed people a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if you've seen the other trailers. I only saw the teaser in front of like Free Fire and a couple other A24 releases in the spring.
I saw some of the teasers and I really dug in and I kind of thought it was like maybe like some sort of monster movie or something, like some sort of creature was there. But, you know, I kind of going back to what I said at the beginning was, you know, even though I had those expectations, you know, I don't know, I like the movie more than having it just be a monster movie, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you judge the movie on its own merits, like you can stare and go, it's a compelling horror film about the apocalypse and about, you know, and about the people in it and what they would do to survive. And even ask the question, like, is it even, you know, after everything you've done, after all of the horror you've been through, you know, are you still going to make it? Like, are you still going, like, are you still like safe?
Mm-hmm.
And to Trey Edwards Schultz, I think the answer is no. I think this is his way of saying in the apocalypse, you're just prolonging your death.
Of course. Yeah. I don't know if you read any like behind the scenes stuff or any interviews he did for the movie, but he kind of talked about the movie pretty much being, it was like, he wrote it like after his dad died, who was like, he hadn't talked to in like years. And it was kind of, he was in a very bad headspace. And, you know, kind of, you could see how the themes of like death and like, you know, dying are really in the movie, especially after that, you know, seeing his kind of, reasoning behind the movie, you know?
Right. Oh yeah. I didn't get to see the interviews, but I understand that point of view completely.
Yeah.
Cause really from Travis's point of view, like he, you know, he is looking at his father and he is looking at the other dad in this movie. Like he's looking at the other dad in the movie, Will. He's looking at, you know, him for advice, him and then his dad for his own advice/humanity. And then of course, it's very obvious he was very close to his grandfather. Mm-hmm. And to be the one to not only be, I think he was the one that discovered his grandfather was infected, and then have to like bury him, watch him get shot, and watch him burn. Like that is, you know, I mean, that's, you know, basically he probably getting out, like airing out his laundry about like his ideas of death through that, you know, through the, you know, that opening.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think he said in like an interview, like the stuff they say to the grandfather is like verbatim the stuff he was, the conversations he had, I think, with his dad. So, you know, you could see it had was a very personal scene, you know, from
yeah, and it feels personal. It feels intimate. Like it feels very close. Like every shot of the opening is very close and tight and you know, claustrophobic. Like there's not a lot, there's not that many wide shots in the opening, so it feels more intimate.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So I going back to the audience expectations, do you think we should fault audiences for having expectations or not, you know, or not or should we try to encourage them to try and look at movies in a certain way or like to, you know, judge them for their own merits? I know I'm asking like three or four different questions.
Yeah, no, it's cool. No, I just feel like, you know, people have, well, you know, people have as an audience goer, like they want things, they see a trailer and they see a movie in their head and they can't break out of that mold of when they go into the theater and they think it's going to be that movie and then they get all pissed off. They spend money. So, I mean, to see the movie, so they have some sort of say, but I just think people need to be more open-minded with the films they see or just have a open mind and, you know, just in general, I guess, too.
Right. And I mean, that's my advice too. And look, if you really are not comfortable with this kind of movie, I can see why. Like I can understand if you're not comfortable, but I also want to echo Gene's, you know, sentiment in that you should keep an open mind. Like, yes, the trailers can sell you one thing, but when you walk into a movie, you know, try and keep an open mind and try and let the movie kind of sink in you. Like, and there are plenty of movies that don't deserve it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of movies that don't deserve this kind of treatment, but I feel like It Comes at Night is in a lot of the, like, what A24 is putting out lately. That's just really in general, like what A24 is putting out. Like they're putting out the kind of movies that need to kind of be soaked in.
Yeah, no, of course.
Because even I was watching the trailer for Ghost Story while watching this movie, before watching the movie, and I mean, it looks like another movie that's gonna, you know, that it's a drama that, you know, it's gonna that needs you, the audience, to let the film absorb you and it, you know, get you into that world, especially with that aspect ratio that they're showcasing the movie in.
Yeah, I think it's like, yeah, well, it's I forgot the aspect ratio, but yeah,
so it's asking you as the audience to just let it go. And but then again, you know, if they try to promote it the way this movie really is, I don't think it would have gotten, I don't think people would be talking about it as much.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, it's a tough issue to kind of, I mean, there's no really, like, right answer, you know. People will, you know, have expectations regardless of how you do. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's a weird paradox, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's odd because if A24 really did try, because even The Witch, like, it was promoted as, like, a, you know, typical horror movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if they tried to promote that movie as, you know, as the movie it is or It Comes at Night, I don't think people would still go to it either way. I mean critics will still praise it, because I mean because the thing about critics that I'm noticing is that critics, they're going to have an open mind. They're going to have an open mind, you know, regardless, or most of them will.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
So I think critics will still give it good ratings no matter what, but I don't know if audiences will still turn out to see it.
Yeah.
And that's my problem, is that you know, on one hand, I want people to see these movies and love them, but it's like, you kind of have to lie to them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of have to.
Yeah. No, I agree to get their attention. So.
Right.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah.
You know, marketing. I think Christopher Nolan even said, like, you know, he knows so much about film, but even he's like really puzzled by marketing, or it's something he would wish he was like a expert in, you know. It's really tough.
It is. I mean, film is subjective and everyone has their own experiences and things they find emotional or funny or scary. So the gauge on people is way too like versatile,
because
people have different experiences and different cultural experiences. And some people are willing to put up with more different cultural experiences than others, but or different types of emotional gauges, but it's still, some people, they're just, you know, I think for, you know, darker films, people are not as open to it as much.
Yeah.
So I think that's all I can think about for It Comes at Night. Do you have any more thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I just, just hope people see it with an open mind.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So last weekend, It Comes at Night was the movie to see.
Yeah.
Better
than The Mummy.
Yeah. And hopefully next weekend, you know, there'll be some good stuff. Our friend Diego Crespo saw Cars 3 and he seemed to like it.
Okay. I'm not a big Cars fan, so I'm just not going to see it. I never liked Cars from the start. Maybe I'll see it like on TV or something.
I mean, Pixar is kind of like Marvel, where they don't really churn out garbage. But they have lesser movies, and the car movies are the lesser films.
Yeah, definitely.
So Gene, where can the good people find you? Where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Gene9892. And then on Facebook, We Own Nothing Films.
All right. And you can find me at Movie Kale at The Youth Critic. And at The Youth Critic, you can follow my podcast. As far as the podcast and the retrospective goes, we just posted E.T. and then we'll have The Thing and Men in Black come soon. So we'll see. So look for those in the next couple of weeks. Other than that, next week we're going to talk about CW's Riverdale, because I don't want to do a whole Pixar podcast yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, Riverdale. I need to finish that. I had some friends that actually worked on that.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. I've only made it through the first four episodes, and it's pretty solid.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll talk about that next week, and that's it for the Youth Critic Podcast. Thank you, Gene, so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, and that is it. See you all, or see you listeners next week.
It feels like the second hand is frozen.
Oh my God.
Every corpse has a tale to tell, and this one has the touch of evil.
Archie, a kid is dead. I saw you guys.
How you feel about me? Is it real?
I'm asking you right now if you love me.
Who are you lying to?